Good afternoon. Happy Tuesday lunchtime. You're listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. Real Talk is the show that seeks to answer questions, large and small. And if you have a question you'd like answered on Real Talk, send us a note at realtalk@voiceofvashon.org. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. I'm here every Tuesday with you at lunchtime. Today, our big question is, how can each of us begin to mitigate global warming? That's a huge question. And here to help us answer that question is John Doherty. He's a Tacoma resident and activist with the Citizens Climate Lobby. Welcome, John.
Hey, Susan. Good to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is a huge question with no simple answers from what we've discussed, at least before we started the show today. Tell us a little bit about what Citizens Climate Action does.
Yeah, Citizens Climate Lobby. We're a national organization, been in existence since 2007. Very dynamic, very focused on creating a national carbon fee and dividend law. Growing very fast. We're doubling every year. And starting off from about 15 people in 2007, nationally we're over 92,000 now, have over 400 chapters across the United States. So we're out there, citizen grassroots activists, and doing it.
So you said you're working to lobby with legislatures, I presume, around the country. How much are you working with our Governor Jay Inslee? He's been talking about a climate tax, if I have that right. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it's close enough. So Citizens Climate Lobby is really laserly focused on national legislation. While we pay attention to what's going on in the states, our focus is on the national issue. And there's a lot of good reasons for that, I think.
What are they?
Well, the biggest is piecemeal efforts, state by state, come with some kind of built-in problems. And one of the problems is that we can't restrict trade between states. And that means if there's a tax on something in one state, businesses may leave it for another state that doesn't have that tax.
Oh, I see.
Thereby affecting jobs and tax bases and so on and so forth. This doesn't mean that those state efforts are not a good idea. I absolutely think they are a good idea, and I certainly personally support the state-level initiatives here in the state of Washington. But the real answer, in my view, and CCL's view, is that we really need a national law that affects all states equally and that allows us to manage the border thing, because the United States government can manage the border in terms of commerce, whereas the states can't.
How much success are you having working with the current administration in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I'll answer that in two different ways. I would say with the executive branch, it's a problem, and I don't need to dig any deeper into that.
Right.
Your listeners know exactly what I'm talking about there. But our focus has always been on the U.S. Congress, because that's where the laws come from. And Citizens Climate Lobby is very supportive of and very closely associated with a caucus in the House, Climate Solutions Caucus. It's a pretty unique critter in that it requires an equal number of Republicans and Democrats on the caucus. Part of the Citizens Climate Lobby's approach, and I think really a significant part, is that it's nonpartisan, or when we're in the House, of course, we'd be saying bipartisan. And a reflection of that is this requirement that the Climate Solutions Caucus has to be equally divided between Republicans and Democrats. So right now there are 68 members, so that means 34 Democrats and 34 Republicans, and they're specifically on board recognizing the problem that climate change presents and looking to create legislation to address it.
Do these congressional members of the Climate Solutions Caucus join the caucus by choice, or are they recruited?
Well, I think it's probably both. Nobody's going to require them to join, and they're definitely recruited. The way the politics play out, of course, there's more Democrats that want to be on the caucus than Republicans.
Yeah.
And so the recruiting is taking place amongst the Republicans, and there are a bunch of Democrats who are pretty much waiting to join the caucus for a Republican to join in partnership with them.
Uh-huh. So the Democrats on the caucus are working to recruit the Republicans as well.
Yeah, and I think Citizens Climate Lobby, I mean, that's part of what we do nationally, is work with, talk to conservatives, Republicans, about joining the caucus.
You have a brief presentation that you provided us, and the first comment is, climate change is driven by human addition of carbon dioxide, CO2, to the atmosphere. And there's been a profound and rapid increase in atmospheric carbon dioxide since the Industrial Revolution, especially in the last 70 years. Okay, I hope nobody's disputing that fact any longer, but I'd like you to tell us what's happened in the last 70 years to make it so intensely worse.
Well, I think it's pretty simple, and that is that the use of carbon fuels has expanded dramatically since the 70s, with huge demands in the United States and in other countries as well for electricity and for vehicular transportation and those kind of things. So as the economies grew larger and more powerful, the appetite for carbon fuels increased dramatically. And so there was a pretty much of a general increase in carbon dioxide emissions from the start of the Industrial Revolution to the till the 50s, when things the whole slope changed.
Yeah. So it's kind of a byproduct of affluence, or of at least striving toward that in other countries as well as the U.S.
Yeah, the energy basically drives the economies, or it's absolutely necessary for the economies to grow, and there's lots of pressure politically from country to country to grow, and so that means more and more demand for fuel, and in our case, or energy, in our case, so far we've been relying on carbon for that.
Do you have an idea of what percentage of this CO2 emission that leads to the greenhouse effect comes from us in the United States?
Well, I don't have a specific percentage number on the top of my head, but the simple version is that the United States is a major, major producer of carbon dioxide. And right now, the only country in the world that produces more than we do is China, and they've just recently surpassed us. So we bear very large responsibility for the carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere. And that's in terms of what we're producing right now. I think if you go back 100 years or so, we clearly have produced the majority of the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
That, to me, is a conundrum. And I'm almost thinking out loud here, but when I hear you say that, I realize that on the one hand, the United States thrives on consumer spending, whether it be here or in countries that we export our fossil fuel using stuff to. And the other side of that conundrum is, what, if anything, are we doing to help those other countries minimize the damage that they do, the carbon dioxide that they emit, using the same products that we send to them? Are we doing anything to educate them? How do we help them do a better job than we've done?
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand your question, but I'll just respond by saying I think for us to talk about educating other countries, a little bit like the pot calling the kettle black. I mean, we're the ones that need to be not only educated, but we need to be changing our behavior. And, you know, I don't really see that there's that much to be gained in lecturing other countries about how they should be managing their fossil fuels.
We don't have any science to give them from our bad experience.
Well, the reality is that there are a lot of countries in the world who are really far outpacing us in terms of transitioning to clean energy. Germany is a great example that well over half of their energy right now is generated with solar panels. And while it's easy to throw rocks at China, we've all seen the satellite photos and the pictures of people walking the streets of Beijing with masks on because of the pollution. But the reality is that the Chinese are really taking clean energy very seriously. And the projections are that they're going to really have our lunch in terms over time in terms of clean energy. They have a lot of political pressure there to clean up those dirty cities, and they're taking it seriously. And their electric cars, they're going to be the world's largest producer of electric cars here, not very long. We'll be driving Chinese electric cars if we don't get our act together here, really.
Well, bravo for China. We talked off mic before we started the show about human behavior and how it is driving what's going on here with the use of fossil fuels in the United States. So how can each of us, each individual, have an impact on improving the situation, on reducing carbon emissions?
Well, I'll start off by talking a little bit about just the conversations that we have with friends, family, the crazy uncle at Thanksgiving, and that sort of thing. There's quite a spectrum of points of view in the United States regarding global warming, climate change. There's a wonderful organization called the Yale Climate Opinion Group, and I really recommend anybody who's interested in this subject to go online and find it. They've been tracking opinion in the United States for a number of years and basically dividing the various opinion groups up. And so when we're talking to other people, we have to pay attention to what is their perspective. Is this somebody who's alarmed? If I'm talking to somebody who's alarmed, the conversation is going to be about what can we do. If I'm talking to somebody who is, let's say, an evangelical Christian, then the approach has to be very different. Then we're talking about stewardship of the earth and taking care of this beautiful creation that that we're blessed to live in. So I think the place we start with these various points of view is understanding who we're talking to and the perspective. And I think one of the huge dangers is, and I experienced this in myself in thinking about this, is to start slipping into an us and them point of view on climate. I mean, I heard a commentator say, when it's hot for everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're a progressive or a conservative, and or it doesn't matter whether you're affluent or whether you're poor. So I really, and that's one of the strengths, I think, of Citizens Climate Lobby is the nonpartisan approach. It's not an approach of we're right and you're wrong. It's an approach of, okay, let's talk about this problem in a way that works for you, that's understandable to you, and let's come up with solutions or a solution that we can all live with.
And I'd like to go even deeper into the notion of what we can do and make it personal. Because I think all of us, no matter how much we believe in climate change here in the U.S., continue to drive our cars, continue to use plastic bags, continue to use paper towels, continue to do those things that consume the planet and destroy it and laminate it with the ocean of plastics that we have in the ocean. How do we begin to address that and change that behavior?
Well, I'll break it down into a couple parts. When we look at the overall problem of carbon emissions, it looks like about a third of the choices that can be made are choices an individual can make. These are the kind of things you're talking about. You know, what kind of vehicle am I going to drive? How many airplane trips I'm going to take and that sort of thing. That's about a third of the problem. So the solutions there are individual and they take time. I mean, we do what we're accustomed to doing. I put solar on my house last spring. It's like, hey guys, let's get solar on our roofs. It makes economic sense. There are incentives from the state. And so let's do it. I mean, Germany has got more cloudy days than we do here. And they're over 50%. Solar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think there's a little mythology that solar doesn't work in Washington, especially Western Washington, because it's cloudy and rainy. And that's not true.
Well, and Trump just slapped tariffs onto Chinese imports of solar panels.
Well, yeah, and that's unfortunate. But it actually doesn't affect us here in the state of Washington, because the incentives provided by the state for putting solar on our houses require that the panels be manufactured here in Washington. So for us, that's not going to make a difference.
Cool.
For everybody else, or for most other people, it is. It's unfortunate. So that's one third is human behavior. And we know the answer to that. There's nothing rocket science-y about what we do in changing our behavior. I am going to be moving to an electric car this summer. By the way, internal combustion engines are pretty much doomed regardless of what happens. And so I feel good about...
Explain that a little further.
Well, there's this guy named Tony Seba. It's S-E-B-A. He's an economist and an instructor at Stanford University. He's written widely on this subject. And I encourage everybody to go out and at least watch his lecture on YouTube. The confluence of technology, of decreasing costs of solar energy, autonomous cars, electric cars, basically are going to drastically change the way we do transportation. And saying that, though, it's still very important that we take political steps, because that's going to take time. And we don't have time. I mean, the Earth is already warmer than it was 100 years ago.
Right.
And 2 or 3 degrees makes a huge difference across the Earth.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fires to remind us of that, and extreme temperature. What kind of resistance do you get in Congress from that notion that global warming really is causing these extreme natural experiences that we're having?
Well, my personal belief is that the guys in Congress who, let's say, are oppositional towards having a carbon fee and dividend law, they're not dumb guys. I mean, they see the science and they know what the answers are. The problem is that if they don't pay attention to their base, which doesn't believe it or chooses not to believe it, they're not going to get reelected. I mean, we've seen that happen. So the issue for us is creating political will, and that's part of our grassroots effort. And so the political will is created by doing the kind of stuff that I do and that my fellow CCLers do, and that is reaching out to the community, doing presentations, writing letters to the editor, communicating with our congressmen. By the way, I'll just throw in that the congressmen here in the state of Washington are pretty much on board regarding climate. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be writing to them. We should be communicating with them, saying thank you for what you're doing with the climate.
Supporting them. You're listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. And we're talking with Citizens Climate
Lobby
activist John Doherty from Tacoma, who's here to talk with me, Susan McCabe, your host. And we can do this thanks to Windermere Vashon Real Estate. They support our community information programming and our emergency alert service. They make all this possible. We couldn't be talking to John without Windermere Vashon Real Estate. And you're talking about citizens' action, grassroots lobbying, John Doherty. How do we on Vashon Island access what you have to offer?
Okay, well, if you don't mind, I want to just fill in the blank, a little blank that was left. You asked me about what to do about this, and I covered the first third, which is the, what we can do as individuals.
Right.
But the other two thirds is really outside the grasp of an individual consumer or citizen. So, for instance, I'm talking about a coal-fired power plant. You and I don't have any specific control over that, other than maybe turning our thermostat down a little bit or something like that. So that other two-thirds really is political. We can turn down our thermostats, we can drive electric cars, we can put solar on our roofs and so on and so forth. But until the market in energy changes in our country, we're going to be producing way more carbon dioxide than we should be producing. And that's done through the political process. And that's why Citizens Climate Lobby is focused on getting national legislation to address the issue.
What kind of progress are you making in that direction?
Well, I'll quote Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela said, "You lose until you win." So we're absolutely making progress. One of the measures of that is that every year, Citizens Climate Lobby has a lobbying day in Washington, D.C., where we're taught about how to lobby most effectively, and we go in and we talk to our elected representatives right in Congress. Last year, there were over 1,700 citizens climate lobby activists in Washington, D.C. during that kind of conversation. As I mentioned, this has been doubling every year. So are we making progress? Absolutely. I think things are probably going to have to change at the federal level. I mean, that's pretty clear that things are going to have to change at the federal level. But in the meantime, we work to create the environment, create the political will, change minds one mind at a time, and that kind of thing.
That takes a lot of energy. I have to say, I appreciate how much you and I'm sure your colleagues in the Citizens Climate Lobby are putting into this effort. And when I think about those things that cause our planet problems, they are big business, like plastic cups, plastic bags. When you are working with congressional representatives, how do you get from them to these big businesses that are going to be affected if people stop using plastics? And what about the jobs that might be affected? How do you respond to that?
Well, let me approach it from the, I've used this expression, carbon fee and dividend, several times. And this is the core of the Citizens Climate Lobby approach. This is what our model legislation is. And essentially, the plan is to create a fee on carbon producers at the well or the point where it's imported in the United States. And the dividend part is that that fee is returned to households. So it's got the aspect of market choice, that the individual households can decide what to do with the money. So it's got an equity thing associated with it too. It's pretty basic economic principle that when you raise the price of something, less of it is going to be used. So nobody's really going to the corporations and saying, you know, well, we think it'd be a good idea if you change your behavior. We're just simply saying, we're going to put a fee on this essentially pollutant that you're bringing up out of the earth and distributing it through our economy. We're going to put a fee on that. That's going to have the effect of making clean energy more attractive and dirty energy less attractive.
Who fights you on that?
Well, of course, the people that are going to be paying the fee fight it. Absolutely, they fight it. And that's essentially the large oil companies. I mean, the oil companies have got huge reserves in the ground, and they want to pull those reserves out, and they want to sell them to consumers, and they want to distribute the proceeds to their shareholders. So the large corporations are the ones that oppose this. There are other people that oppose it. And, you know, there's a segment of our society, a very significant segment of our society, that doesn't really like government. You know, they think, you know, Ronald Reagan said government's not the solution, it's the problem. And so we have a significant chunk of people like that in our society, and they're afraid that their freedom to do what they want to is going to be reduced, that this is just going to be another tax, and there's some kind of hidden liberal agenda, and so on and so forth. That's why the dividend thing makes so much sense, because the Citizens Climate Lobby approach is really not regulation oriented at all. It's market based, basically. You know, we're gonna put a fee, and by the way, I think the fee is totally thoughtful and reasonable, because essentially the carbon producers are putting their effluent out in the atmosphere, and they're not paying the price that we pay in terms of global warming and health issues and the natural disasters that you referred to a little earlier. So
is there any incentive for them for the plastic bag manufacturers to go to using some like kelp or some renewable source to create their products? Is there, if there's a fee on the plastic bags, what sort of incentive do these companies get for changing what they create or what kind of resources they use?
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit out of my element on the plastic production process, but plastics are essentially petroleum products.
Right.
So we could expect that as the cost of petroleum goes up, the attractiveness of other kinds of containers and that sort of thing will show up, and that consumers will just naturally gravitate towards the less expensive way to do it. You know, I think that deciding that this is the right thing to do while it's a nice thing, it really doesn't get us to where we want to be, because most people make significant decisions based on economics, and that's why the carbon fee and dividend basically taps into that natural human quality.
And that's one of the things you mentioned that you are about, and it sounds to me like you've done some study of why humans behave the way they do, and you have to get to that in order to find ways to change their behavior. So what have you learned about American consumers and why they do what they do?
Well, the very first thing I've learned is about myself in looking at this. And we, as human beings, although we probably show up in different places in the political or economic spectrum, at root, we're all human beings. And we develop a worldview, and that worldview makes a lot of sense to us, and we like to stick with it. So to challenge a person's worldview is not an easy proposition. It has to be done very, very carefully. And as I've mentioned before, the natural us versus them, or if you could just understand what it is I'm trying to tell you right now, everything would be okay. I got to toss this in. Back in my corporate career, there was a woman who had above her desk, there was a sign that said, "I'm not arguing with you. I'm just explaining to you why I'm right."
So, and that is kind of a typical American view.
Absolutely, yeah. It is. So understanding where other people come from, paying attention to what their values are. I mean, if a person loves the outdoors because they like to hunt and fish, personally, I don't. But if a person loves the outdoors and they love to hunt and fish, let's talk about the issue in those respects. If somebody's an evangelical Christian, let's talk to them in terms of stewardship. If somebody is a business owner, let's talk to them about the benefits of clean energy for their business.
Speak their language. Understand your audience. Those are really basic communication skills.
They are. Like a lot of basic skills, while they're easy to understand, they're not quite so easy to put into practice.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking with John Doherty of Citizens Climate Lobby, and this is Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. We're here with you every Tuesday at noon. And John, we're just about running out of time. What would you like to leave people with? What would you like people to walk away from this show thinking or doing?
Well, one of the key things I'd love is for people listening to get engaged with Citizens Climate Lobby. We're going to be on the island here on Earth Day, which I believe is April 22nd at Vashon High School. We'll have a table there. Love to have you stop by. There's one of our activists, Jenny Lohr, is going to be tabling there with us, and she's all down for creating more interest on the island with Citizens Climate Lobby, getting together for letter writing and things like that. So that's what I want more than anything. It's a great way to make a difference. Even if you just join, you're making a difference by increasing our numbers.
And we have a pretty active group here on Vashon, the Vashon Climate Action Group, who I bet you have been in touch with. And I'm guessing they will be at Vashon High School with you on Earth Day as well.
They will. And as a matter of fact, they're also this Saturday, February 3, I believe that Saturday, they're going to be at the Vashon Presbyterian Church talking about taking action on carbon. And that's certainly has my support, and I'm glad they're doing that.
John Doherty, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to explain to us what Citizens Climate Lobby is doing for us. This is, folks, the only home all of us have, whatever our political stripe or ethnicity may be, this is our home, and it's up to us to take care of it. Thank you for joining us. Next week, we're going to talk with Debbie Irving, the author of Waking Up White, about white privilege and how it affects those of us who are of color or not. I want to thank producers Kaya Boding, Gail Kellner, and Bill West, and the composer of our theme music, Luke McQuillan. Thanks again for listening.